woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, and welcome back to Sacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, Ricky on the board on a very traffic-filled Kennedy day. Not sure what that's all about. I guess it's really bad up at the airport. I didn't know this was a big weekend to get the bleep out of here or in or someplace. I guess you can't be getting in at this hour. You must be leaving. Anywho, S&P futures up 14, NASDAQ futures up 53 as we relentlessly march up. As I got to believe, with the shutdown, where the Fed's doing their job and pouring money in and pumping this stuff up, and Elon Musk with his stock, Tesla, not exactly sure why, because they had kind of crummy earnings and virtually no growth. Stock is now up from, where were we? We were, 233 on the 7th of April, and we're now 441, so we've about doubled. That's interesting. Do we have Professor Kevin?
Good morning.
Do you have your Tesla stock and extra calls just in case?
I'm afraid I don't.
What the hell, man? Buy the dip. Maybe we are the dips. We don't know.
Well, we could be. I'll volunteer for being a dip. So what's all the traffic there? Is it today to get the hell out of Chicago?
I don't know. The whole it's all backed up into going O'Hare and coming into downtown. It was pretty backed up as well. It's
Chicago's celebrating, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, they allege the Kennedy work is going to be done in about 3-4 weeks. I'll believe that when I see it. 3 years of fiasco there. Dansby Swanson with the big day, huh?
He was so good. The Cubs defense in general is really, really good.
Yep.
They have a lot of really outstanding defensive players on that team. And even the guys who don't get a lot of recognition. You look at Michael Bush or Shaw. Those guys are really good, too, on defense. So they really don't have a weak spot in their defense. And as I said in text last night, I would, if I were a pitcher, I'd love to have that defense behind me.
Yeah, they had a couple that were, well, the Horner one was, we've seen a million of them go the other way. That's what baseball is, the world's most frustrating game. Plus, in the first inning, the Cubs only came out with, what, one or two runs? They could have had like six. They still can't hit with people on base. What are they, like 2-for-12 with people on base during the series, or 1-for-11 or something? But the first two hits were...
I think San Diego was something like 1-for-15.
Yeah.
So I might be willing to credit the pitching somewhat. Now, the Cubs have had their struggles anyway, so that it's not new. But nevertheless, Bush's home run late in the game was huge.
Yeah. Some of the hits, Yu Darvish makes it feel like some of the days I was on played softball. They used to have people that were kind of so skilled at 16 in softball, they called them the dumpers. Guys that had big power, but then they could also just reach up, take a full swing, and just like hit the bottom half of the ball and just like drop it in the outfield. It was so damn... Well, the ball at third base was the cheapest hit I think I've ever seen in Major League Baseball, except for like a roller out to the mound. The little... Of course, they were playing way off third, but the little pop-up that landed just inside the line and skipped foul. I don't think I've ever seen that.
I used to love to hit those to the right side. Put some inside-out swing on it, and the ball goes over the first baseman's head with a little spin on it, lands about 5 feet inside the baseline and then kicks itself about 20 feet foul.
By the way, I have a play for you as soon as I get the thing up here. They said it's the rarest play in baseball. It's only happened maybe once in the major leagues, and don't think it was ever anybody was ever dumb enough to do it in Pee Wee League or Little League. And of course, your Cubs were involved. And I don't remember seeing this, but I forget what team it was against here. Let me I'll have it here in a second. It has to do with it's not like an unassisted triple play, which you get once in a while, especially if the fielder happens to be in a position to want to make it unassisted and then does it. This is one that this could be people not. I can't imagine that a manager didn't pull like every hair of his body out, not just his head. It had to do with your buddy Javi Baez is on. He's batting, and there's a guy in second base, right? Two out. So Javi hits one, dribbles one down the first baseline. The first baseman comes in, picks up the ball, and goes to tag Baez. Well, Baez retreats to home plate. Now, you and I have played first base enough. You don't have to worry about the guy in second. If you get the force, he doesn't score. All you do is turn around and walk back to first base and tag it, right? Plus, Javi can't be safe at home. He's got to go to first. So if you keep walking at him, eventually you're going to be able to tag him, right? So the first baseman goes in to tag him. The guy at second is now rounding third, heading for the plate.
The guy at second was Contreras.
Really? So then he...
Yeah.
So he,
who was always was a terrific base runner.
The guy's heading for home. The first baseman is now dumb enough to throw the ball home thinking that the guy can score. Well, he can't score if Baez is out, no matter how you get him out. So then he's safe, right? Now, still, you could just force Baez out and the run doesn't count. So now the first baseman is in. So Baez sprints back past the first baseman. The second baseman is racing over to cover first. The catcher wings it over his head into the outfield, and Baez ends up... I didn't see that play, but I've never heard it. The article is the guy goes... You won't even see this in Pee Wee League. They know the rules.
I've seen it a ton of times. So, yeah, just to fill in the blanks a little bit. So, yeah, he dribbled the ball up the first baseline. So the first baseman fielded a few feet in front of first base, but in fair territory. So Baez is basically just goofing around. I doubt he was thinking that this was going to unfold in any other way. But you know that he just stopped and sort of was goofing around, and the first baseman, like you said, made the mistake of following him backwards so that he could put the tag on him, because that's what he was going to do. And originally he was just going to stand there and wait, and Baez was going to run up and he was going to put the tag on him. Well, Baez just stopped and said, I'm not going to move. And then you walk towards me, I'm going to move backwards a little bit. And yeah, you're right. All he had to do was say, well, the heck with that. I'll just turn around, go step on first base. Everything will be done. And he didn't. And when they got close to home, by then, Contreras was all the way around, was making his dash for home. The guy looked at him and panicked and threw the ball at the catcher, who was not expecting it. and then hijinks ensued.
Because all he had to do is keep walking him home. You can't retake home.
Yeah.
Well,
so, it was a total brain fart play. Twice, really twice. One, following Baez back towards home plate, and two, then throwing the ball to make a play at on Contreras. And, I think Baez was goofing around. Credit for the real heady play, that's Contreras for running all the way through it.
He doesn't catch anymore, does he?
A little bit, but yeah, he's become more. He became for St. Louis more of a first baseman for at least the second half of the season, and I think his contract is up, and so they may not be re-signing him. St. Louis is the Cardinals are a mess, and
how did they get that way? They went from 31,000 to 18,000 season ticket holders in like 3 years. Some of that, I think, is money. I think it's expensive. And I honestly think some of it's inconvenience, Kevin, with no tickets. But I know everybody seems to tell me I'm a Luddite on that, but every time I talk to somebody going to the game, even Jimmy, our producer from yesterday, he his group has tickets for the playoffs. They got they have the 62 game package. They have the night games and weekends or something at Wrigley. So they got two out of the three of the tickets. But they had to go to Will Call, and or somehow or another he had to go to Will Call. He says that's a goat bleep. They can't even hand you a ticket at Will Call. They give you some kind of a, they pump it into your phone and you over to the other place. They can't even run you off of, you know, the code on a piece of paper or anything.
That's because they have no way of processing a ticket. But they should. I mean, shouldn't you be able to just scan the QR code on there? And the answer would be yes. But everybody's got their process.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you could easily put the QR code on the ticket, and if the ticket was reported stolen, just cancel it, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, but I mean, wherever it is,
I was wrong. Contreras has two years left on his contract with St. Louis.
They've kind of never been.
He's still a pretty good hitter. His OPS is high sevens, which is well above average. It's not big time star, type, but it's not. That's pretty good.
You know, I read this. Read all these stupid articles and. Whenever I see a baseball article, Kevin, I just have to read it for God's sake. And anyway, this was a big one. I think I mentioned it a couple weeks ago. They're trying to compare pitchers' speeds now from essentially years ago and how they measured them. And it came down to way back in the day, like in Bob Feller's day, somehow you measured the speed of the ball after it passed home plate or like 6 feet past home plate or something. And then they got a somewhere got a radar where it was right about home plate. Then the ones, you know, in the 80s and 90s were like halfway home or something. And now it's the second it comes out of the pitcher's hand. So the guy is doing all these calculations, and the ball slows down. It doesn't look like it does, but it slows down coming in. And, you know, probably as much as, what, 8-9 miles an hour? 60 feet, maybe? I don't know if it's that much. So the guy went back and recreated, and he still thought that Nolan Ryan might have had the fastest fastball. But, you know, with other guys kind of in there, Bob Feller close, and it's in some of the guys today, obviously, close. But it is a difference. But then I'm no radar gun. What do you think the difference is between out of your hand and when it passes home plate? It's got to be 3-4 miles. I wouldn't guess 10, would you?
I wouldn't guess 10, and I honestly wouldn't guess a whole lot. You know, 5 feet out of your, I mean, there's really not a lot of time for the MPH to change, is there? You know, if it's a couple feet out of your hand versus a couple feet in front of home plate, I can't imagine it being different. Now, I don't know the physics of it, so, you know, who am I to say, but it just doesn't seem logical that it would be substantial.
But if you look at how a knuckleball, at 60 miles an hour, damn near doesn't make it. I mean, it's the same kind of degradation has to happen to a fastball, you would think. There is friction.
You know, it sort of depends on the power of your arm, though, and the power of the throw. I mean, just like with hitting, it you know, there is a strength component that matters a great deal. You know, same thing for hitting. It's, you know, strength is, you know, you have bat speed, which is important, but strength is, you know, as soon as the bat hits the ball, it's going to recoil a little bit. That's just the science. The question of the recoil is how much. It's not going to be discernible in fast motion. In super slow motion, you will be able to see it, but it depends a lot on the strength of the hitter. And I would think that throwing the pitch is the same thing. The strength of the pitcher's arm is going to determine, how much it tapers off or doesn't.
Well, I think that most people probably have some kind of an idea. Like, I don't think that that's exactly the case, actually. I think if you had some kind of machine that popped it out at a certain mile an hour, I mean, I think people could do this real easy, but not you and me. If you had some kind of machine that launched it out of there at 100, I think you could, and you checked it again at home plate, it would be very, no matter who the pitcher was, I mean, a little bit of spin maybe makes a difference, but I think that there's a certain degrade on the thing, no matter what. I mean, they used to be able to figure it out with artillery shells, right?
Before we get away from Javier Baez, because we saw this a lot with some of the Cubs guys, how they tapered off in the second half. remember All-Star Hobby and the great, you know, the great resurgence and all of that? How do you suppose he finished up this total season, statistically speaking?
Well, I don't know. I would guess that since Cleveland made that huge run, that he did pretty well, but maybe not.
Well, he had 109 strikeouts, which actually is not bad for by his standards. But batting average 257, that's kind of typical for MLB today. But it's 257 because a lot of guys, you know, 257 becomes passable when you get a lot of extra base hits and you get on base. You're disciplined at the plate. So his on-base percentage, 282, very low. And his on-base plus slugging, the league average runs something, or, you know, MLB average runs something like, 715, something like that. His was 680. Number of home runs, 12.
Second half of the year?
He turned, no, that's for the whole season.
Okay.
So the second half of the year, you know, was much lower than that because he was an all-star the first half of the season. So like with most things in baseball, guys have hot halves, guys have hot months, but sooner or later they turn back into what they always were. So the young guys, you don't know. They may still be on, you know, a guy like Matt Shaw is... I expect him to be a much better hitter next year than he was this year because he's got a year under his belt. PCA, maybe, with the adjustments we saw yesterday, and they talked about it on the broadcast, if he were to do more of that, then we'd see still a better hitter.
Do they fire you?
Those guys are going to turn into what they always were.
Do they fire you if you choke up?
That's for better and for worse, because there's guys that have a bad first half and then turn into themselves, you know, their historical good numbers too.
Well, I don't. I think you return to the mean, like you say. I don't think you necessarily. How can I explain this mathematically? You turn into what you are, okay? I don't think that the recoil is necessarily there. In other words, if you are a 280 hitter and you start out at 220, I think you'll go back to 280. I don't think you're going to hit 400 to make it up to 280 in the year. Same way if you are a 280 hitter and all of a sudden you're lights out the first 4 weeks.
It sort of depends on how you became a 280 hitter in the first place. Some guys are streaky. If you took Ian Happ as an example, he's streaky as hell. He's either really hot or really cold. And so whatever his historical norm is, he'll probably hit it. But he is a guy who will hit it by getting really, really hot and getting back to there. But, yeah, I think you're right. I think, most guys, they may recover the second half to be what their historical performance is, but that's not going to drag them all the way back to finishing the season with their historical norm.
By the way, Buffalo Breath, we're both wrong here. According to your buddies at AI, a baseball pitch can lose approximately 7-10% of its speed between the pitcher's release and home plate, way more than either of us guessed, primarily due to air resistance. For 100-mile-an-hour fastball, this could mean it arrives at home plate at roughly 90-91. An 85-mile-an-hour pitch might arrive at 76-77. Different pitches, like fastballs versus curveballs, will experience various degrees of speed loss through their spin and aerodynamics. But it's appreciable. Way more. I would not have guessed that. I would have guessed 3 or 4. Oops.
Okay.
Of course, this is AI. We don't know if it's right, even though it's AI.
That's true. It could be wrong. We have to sample this on about 5 different AI engines.
God. Now, where do you suppose they're getting this info?
They're just scraping the internet for it.
But still, that's pretty,
basically
pretty
clear. Basically, they're
stealing
it. That's not that complicated.
Some of it is stealing off of proprietary information, and some of it is stealing it because it's just wide open available.
Well, physics is a fairly exact science, guys.
No. I'm sorry, Carl. No, there are no laws of physics. We know this from other political conversations. It just can't be so.
Why do I think that Carl would have been a knuckleballer?
Well, you know, knuckle something, that's for sure.
I was going to say, knuckle, did you call him a knucklehead? Did you just
No,
call
no,
him
I just said, how come there's no knuckleballers anymore? If I came back, that's what I want to be, is a knuckleballer.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I'm not surprised that they lose a little velocity. I'm surprised that they lose. I would be surprised if it's 7%. But again, it's going to depend on, from pitcher to pitcher, depending on the arm strength.
What do you suppose if you launch one of the seats? Because now you're going up in the air and it's coming down. He's going to pick up some gravity. If he leaves the plate at 110, where do you think he gets to the bleachers at? 50? Probably.
Well, yeah, by the time it gets to the downward arc, yeah. Yeah, they love exit velocities. So, it is a good measure of how, did that guy smoke the ball or what? Hey, Carl, your guy Moises Ballesteros made the Cubs playoff roster, but I don't think he hit the whole series.
I was watching that game at the pub the other night, the wild card window, and on Wednesday, and it was actually one of the things. Chief was talking about in the email. And you too, the way they've got this the playoff set, bullpens are going to matter, right?
Yeah,
because they're just no rest time really.
What we sent out, listeners should be clued in on this. Starting tomorrow, if they go five games, they're five games all in a row.
Yeah.
And the weird part is, I think, that the next series, then somebody starts the next day, right?
Yeah, but I'll tell you, one of the things that I thought was just, I don't watch all that much Major League ball these days, right? So I'm sitting in the bar watching this, and the amount of 100-plus mile-an-hour smoke coming off these guys' arms was pretty impressive.
Oh, God, yeah.
So I was like, okay.
Well, that's the deal. You go in, and you're geared up to pitch as hard as you possibly can, 20 pitches, then you sit down, and somebody else comes in. And it's not good for your arm, necessarily, and I don't know if that teaches you really how to pitch, but... when you look at Aroldis Chapman, how much money has he made? That's all he can do, right? How old is that guy?
But Chapman, like everybody else, he had to learn for it not to be straight. You can throw the ball 100 miles an hour, and that's going to be intimidating to a lot of people, but if it doesn't have any break or anything like that, major league hitters will time it up and they'll get it. So it has to have a little bit of spin. By the way, looking at the Cubs series, they play Saturday and then they don't play again until Monday. So they go. They're scheduled Saturday, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday.
Really? Because I had them playing five in a row. What did I have this screw up?
There's some days off in there. But going back to what Carl said, and what Carl brought up about the bullpens, this is you're in a three game series. There is no such thing as living to fight another day and building that into your into the manager's calculus. And that's why Jameson Taillon yesterday, as an example, was pitching great for four innings, but they weren't going to push it with him. They said that's great, thank you very much, now let's get into our bullpen because we have five really, really reliable guys and we're gonna ride with them. And San Diego did the same thing, only yesterday they had to make the change in the second inning. So
well, they're also they're totally hung up that you can't get the same guy out twice, which I think it's total BS, but that's their shtick.
It isn't the twice as much as they worry most about the third time through. And I think, the problem with the thing that they don't really discuss about third time through the lineup, because once these guys have seen you twice, is that we're talking about the third time through the lineup starts with the best hitters on the team in the first four slots.
Yeah.
So, you're going around the third time with guys who were really good hitters in the first place, and then on top of it, they're smart hitters who know how to adjust.
Well, I'm sort of torn between that makes some sense, and the other part is if you're going to use five guys for an inning, you're almost searching for the guy who's going to have a bad day. You don't want that either. They almost did that last night in the ninth inning where a guy whacked two batters in a row.
Yeah, and that's because Keller really hasn't pitched more than an inning at a time before, and they were hoping they could get two innings out of him, and let me say this: I can't say whether it was just too many pitches. He was up, pushing up towards 30 pitches, which is more than a relief pitcher will usually do, and maybe he was just losing it for that reason, or maybe it was just the moment and he was squeezing the ball too tight.
Well, he yanked those two curveballs. God bless, they almost hit the bull. I mean, what did they hit, like 8 feet in front of the plate and hit the guy in the bounce both times?
Yeah, it was a it was a couple of really, really bad pitches. And so, yeah. But, you know, again, I think, actually, I think both managers really navigated their pitching staffs really well.
It was
pretty impressive because, you know, what Council always talks about is, I got to figure out how to get 27 outs. And that's all he thinks of is, okay, how am I going to get the next one? How am I going to get the next two or three? And that's really more important, but he's also got to spread it out because he's got to get all 27. And so he's got to make sure everything's lined up so that he is not going to one of his lesser pitchers, so, shall we say, for the, you know, when the game's on the line. He's also been pretty smart about saying, you know, we've been thinking for years about the closer coming in the ninth and finishing out the game. And he, and I think Schilt for San Diego is the same thing, is saying, look, if I'm going through the 2-3-4 hitters in the eighth, I'm putting my closer in the eighth.
Well, that makes some sense. I also think that Sparky Anderson, who I think is long gone, but he said when guys are only pitching five innings, they don't need 4 days rest. I mean, what did
we're probably going to see that if they start Boyd tomorrow.
Yeah, well, Mark Burley, and he went every 4 days, right? And I don't know, I heard him being interviewed. He goes, one of the hardest things is, what do you do the other 3 days? You're not playing, you're sitting around. He goes, I hated it.
They have a throwing day, so yeah. You know that's part of the equation. But yeah,
so what do you think the ratings are? I mean, you get the Boston Yankee had to be pretty high, I would think.
At least in New York.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's usually a. I was surprised that usually Aaron Judge is horrible in this series, but he was okay this time, wasn't he?
That guy can play a little bit.
Well, yeah, he's spectacular. I just was surprised the last two or three playoffs he's been in, he's been terrible. I mean, usually those guys are they do their best when the pressure's on. And you know, baseball's such a weird game, though. You can hit the ball at people and whatever. But I'm kind of with Carl on this, though. I'm not sold on this Tucker. I would have played the other guy, the young guy. All the guy does.
Tucker had two hits for him yesterday.
I'm saying all the other guy does is hit. I mean, you know, it's hard to bench a guy like Tucker, obviously. But he can't play outfield, huh? And Mizuki's out there. He's probably their only weak link on defense.
Yeah, and I don't think he's god awful. He's just not nearly as good as the other guys.
Yeah, he's got the center field and help. You and I could play next up. Well,
he does have help, and when he was in Japan, he won whatever their equivalent was of the Gold Glove. So he was highly regarded at one point. So you've got to deal with that. Yeah, I think as you look at the Cubs team a couple of years down the road, I think what you will find is I'm assuming they're not going to sign Tucker. I don't think they're going to drop $30 million a year into him anyway. If they could sign him for a lot less, they might love to have him. But I don't really expect them to sign Tucker. So I think you'll see Owen Casey as their right fielder, and I think Suzuki's only got a year left on his contract, and Suzuki is now their full-time designated hitter. I'd expect Ballesteros to be their designated hitter going forward after, you know, whether it's next year or whether it's after Suzuki's contract is up.
Yeah, I would go with that. You know, I still, this boy talking about an old dude talking. A couple times last night, you know, when they're only up two, I said, you know, they got to get another run here. Was it the one inning they had, was it first and second and nobody out? I'm watching the game with Jimmy. Of course, Jimmy's like a friggin' Boston guy. Every time a guy throws two balls in a row, you got to yank him. It was up to him. They'd have no pitchers in the fourth inning. That's a very Boston trait, by the way. I said, you know, I know it's blasphemy, but they need to lay down a bunt here. They need this run. Sure enough, the guy hits a ball into a double play, and the next guy hits one to deep right field and would have scored somebody. I mean, someplace along the line, you got to move people over, and they don't choke up. They don't know how to hit the ball to the right side, and they just don't. They never do it. I think you'd be castigated if you ever called a bunt as a manager now.
Well, they did have Ian Happ bunt a guy over to third with one out yesterday.
Well, maybe they learned from the first one, but...
Well, and that was, I believe, was it Shaw? Yeah, and it was No, it was Horner, and then he got thrown out at the plate on a ground on an infield grounder.
I thought he was safe.
Oh, it was close, and that one they did challenge it, and there was an angle that looked like his hand was in there, but they did not overturn it.
For the listeners, it was a really tough challenge because he slid in head first, so the left arm goes for the plate. If you looked at the regular thing, it looks like the catcher tagged him right on the wrist before it hit before his hand hit the plate. From the other angle, there was a big gap between the glove and the wrist, and he actually tagged him basically on his neck. And if you go with that angle, he was in easy. But obviously they didn't. But one looked like he tagged him on the wrist, and the other one showed a lot of daylight between the two. I thought for sure that they were going to overturn that. But they didn't.
Yeah, I thought so too, but they didn't.
So
that was a case where they did bunt. I know you've been clamoring for Crow Armstrong to bunt, but I've seen him bunt. He's not bad at it, but every time I've ever seen him bunt, he just does the full square. You know, he's not a drag bunter. If he wants to learn to do that, I think that would be a weapon for his game. That could be another 10 hits per season.
Well, the reason why it got me on that shtick was the Cora stuff. They said, who's the best bunter ever? And I'm thinking, okay, it's got to be like Nellie Fox or somebody like that. And it turns out, they said, no, it's Mickey Mantle. When he was batting lefty, if he saw guys on the right side that deep, he would drag one. His percentage was 600 on bunts where he bunted the hit on the right side. And I'm thinking, Pete's got a lot of power. If those guys were ever back there, it's kind of a layup for him, I think he's faster than Mantle, maybe all around. But the first base, I don't know, was anybody ever faster than Mantle when he was young? But I'm saying that's a weapon. It's not just sacrifice, like you were saying, Kevin.
Yeah. So it is a weapon, and not only is it a weapon, but because he's a good base stealer, there's an 80% chance that he would turn that into a double, essentially a double.
Well, how's the federal shutdown affecting you? Evidently, it's a.
It isn't. If you don't watch cable news or you don't spend a lot of time on social media, you wouldn't know anything was going on.
Well, if you were in San Francisco, you would. If you were like a guy, this weekend is their big air show and Navy Week, and evidently, all these restaurants and bars are all loaded up with stuff. They get this massive amount of people. Because they have a big air show over the bay, and evidently they just canceled the Blue Angels. And they're pissed off. The people who own bars and restaurants are going, wait a minute, couldn't you have told us this like 4 days ago before we ordered everything? And I guess, I don't know why a ship wouldn't come in, or I don't know what else you can do with a ship, but I didn't get the connection between the ship thing, but the Blue Angels, I suppose you could cancel, yeah. So they're not too happy about it. Yeah, it kind of rubs people a long way, wrong way to you, that everybody is laid off, all the stuff gets canceled, and then everybody gets paid anyway. So it ends up being kind of like a vacation, which is a little weird.
Not working.
What?
And they get paid for not working.
Yeah. So many ends up. I don't. What would if you were on if you've been planning for 5 years to go on a national park trip this week? Were you staying in the Notel Motel, putting the quarter in a vibrator, or what?
I hate to hate to fathom the thought.
Yeah,
there have been some reports that we got people in the Trump administration working on saying who is going to be who is being furloughed and who, because they're non-essential, can we decide as we look at this that they don't need to come back. So it will be interesting to see how that shakes out, if and how.
Yeah, well, it's whatever. Some of this stuff is an interesting conversation yesterday with Lou. And by the way, it kind of dovetails into a lot what Carl talks about. And it actually dovetails into what I talk about in police and fire, not so much fire. But when you have people make these monumental decisions and they're just all wrong and they just kind of go off on their merry way, it's sort of the same thing with... we're talking about me tying two things together. Now when I look at a really bad play in football or a bad call or something, I immediately think that the refs got money in the game, only because they're advertising gambling like during the game. And you kind of wonder, that if somebody makes a really crummy call on, you know, a vaccine or something like that, like, you know, Carl's been all over, and all of a sudden you find out the guy got paid to do that, like somewhere in the bureaucracy, or a senator, or somebody. Boy, that really teased me off. The thing that got me going on this, we have a listener. I don't even know if she's a listener. Maybe she somehow texts me and says that she knows a guy in L.A., Vegas, that is all bleeped up. And he was in Afghanistan, and a dude took 14 inoculations going over there. And Lou was actually suing the government on the anthrax once. I'm sure that was one of them. And then he was some like 2-3 times he was near one of those burning pits, which evidently were just obnoxious stuff. And now the guy's got mental issues, physical issues, autoimmune stuff, skin problems. I mean, what? I mean, they're just going to sort of take care of the guy, hope he dies or what? And then everybody's going to just drop the other way? I mean, you got to, you know, it doesn't do you a whole lot of good right now to go take people 40 years ago and yank them out of their house and throw them in jail. But at some point, it can't be nothing either. I mean, I don't know what the solution is here. I actually don't, but I don't like to see people get hurt either. I mean, we saw it in Vietnam. Oh, Agent Orange? Screw it. You know, who cares if those guys get a problem? Have a problem later? Then we'll deny, right? And how long do we deny asbestos, for God's sake? 20 years?
Well, and how long did they deny it knowing better?
You know, I tell you what, this is the weirdest damn story. I come up with some of the weird ones. Somewhere or another, we had in high school, it was kind of a reading comprehension class, they would actually give you a pretty good story. You know, some of it had to do with sports or something, and then you were supposed to read it, shove it aside, and then they ask you questions on it, and you're supposed to have recall right away. Of course, nobody does anything like that anymore, do they? Why would you do something like that? Actually read something and remember what you read? One of the things had to do with an asbestos plant in Puerto Rico or somewhere down in the Caribbean. And the plant, none of the people, mesothelioma takes a long while. You could get mesothelioma when you're 65 if you worked as a plumber when you're 18. Read, who's the guy, Johnny Lattner, Notre Dame, and world's best tackle. That was his name. Merlin Olsen worked, what, one summer as a pipe fitter, and he died when he was 65 of mesothelioma, something like that. Well, what they noticed, there's all these stray dogs, you know, wherever it is in the Caribbean, around the plant, and all the stray dogs are dying of cancer when they're like 2 or 3 years old. This is 50 years ago. Nobody put 2 and 2 together?
Somebody put 2 and 2 together. They just didn't want to know.
I mean, when you see stuff like that, you just,
when I said
just sickens
you. Didn't want to publicize.
It just sickens you, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, it does. And, you know, this goes back to, you know, how many studies are we seeing now that are actually confirming what we long believed about the vaccines, the COVID vaccines?
Yeah.
And this is starting to really, really bubble up. I mean, this is, now it's like, you know, the study of the week that is exposing it.
Yeah, what was the one this week, Kevin? It was like 2 days ago one came out. I was going to ask you. One came out like this week. It was, who did it? And was, they said how dangerous the COVID was for younger people or something?
Well, or how dangerous the jabs, but what we're seeing for fatalities, what we're seeing for cancer cases, this is a big deal. And is everybody who was forcing this on us, or trying to force this on us, going to skate on it? And the answer is, yeah, they probably are.
Yeah, this latest one that came out, by the way, was a 2% rate of myocarditis among everybody who took it. And by the way, just for those who are unaware of this, myocarditis, the damage that does, if you get it, is always permanent. That doesn't mean it's necessarily going to kill you tomorrow. But the compromise to your cardiac condition is irreversible.
Yeah, and that's essentially true of just about any kind of heart damage. So, you know, why would it be any different from myocarditis? But yeah, heart function typically does not improve with time. It doesn't. It's not like this self-healing process. And
well, and the thing is though, you know, Kevin, what they were saying is that this was, you know, this, yeah, this was recognized on the label, but it's, you know, it's extremely rare. It's, you know, 100,000. No, it's 2%.
That's a real lot.
Well, yeah, yeah. Well, that's much greater. By the
100 million people in the United States. Yeah, that's a big number.
Well, not only that, but that is much greater than the risk of the virus to just about everybody.
Yeah,
yeah, except that's true. The case fatality rate was less, you know, but half, less than half of 1%.
Well, it was very age stratified, but the only people for which it was substantially more dangerous than that were those people who were both elderly and had one or more comorbid conditions. And of course, you know, the rate of those comorbid conditions among elderly people is pretty high. All right. So, I mean, it's among, you know, among people that were 70 plus and had one or more of the conditions, the CFR was like 4%, which is, I mean, that's, you know, that's nasty. All right. But for everybody else, and we knew that it was not just age, that you had to have one of those conditions very early on, because we had all the data out of the New York coroner's office, where you had among 85-year-old people at 80 plus that didn't have any of those, the CFR was essentially zero.
Yeah. So now let's back up the train and say, all along, did it ever make sense to have one size fits all prescribed treatment? Did it need to be targeted for at-risk people? And of course, the answer is the latter.
Well, actually, you know, with a myocarditis rate at that level, there is no group for which it works on a mathematics basis, because it's not, there is no way that everybody was going to get the original strains of it that, you know, that were dangerous. Okay, I mean, if you once Omicron showed up, if you got away with not getting it until then, the odds that particular strain was going to kill you were much, much lower if you were naive to the infection at that point. So, you know, that was, and by the way, we knew that was likely to happen because that's the natural evolution of every virus ever throughout history. So. So the odds that we would have this one buck the trend were very low. But yeah, I mean, there was, and that signal, incidentally, was in the original trial data. They deliberately covered it up.
Well, I have a simple Catholic morality with this.
So who benefited from this? Who benefited from it? Obviously, we have the manufacturers. And so, you know, that's the obvious one. But who benefited from pushing it? Who were the beneficiaries of, because a lot of people who did not work for Pfizer or did not work for Moderna were pushing this stuff and telling us that anybody who had a contrary opinion was actually was causing people to die, was murdering people.
Well, I want to know where the accountability is. How many people do you get to kill before you hang for it?
Well, can I have a split one in there where I can say that all three of us, boy, I lobbed this one out there. All three of us will absolutely agree. Here's, we had a listener at the time, and I think we still do, but from the UK. And he or she, I think it was a he, kept lobbing me stories, and we talked about this. I kept lobbing me stories about there was a guy in Britain that had the COVID early. You know, I guess he came out of it fine, and kept taking himself. Carl, you know this because you were doing it. He kept taking antibody tests on himself, and he was, you know, we started into this. He was 6 months into it and said, "They're still strong as a beacon." And at the same time, they were telling people that even if you had COVID like last week, you should get a shot. And Matty Weber did that. And I go, Matty, what is the matter with you? He came through COVID fine. Like a week later, when he's developing all the antibodies, his doctor told him to go get a shot. A month later, he caught it again and was way worse. So all the shot did was screw up his own antibodies. Whatever possessed them to tell people that already had it, that had antibodies, to go get shots?
Well, I did this myself because I had managed to source antibody tests early on.
Source meaning stole?
No. But they were not approved in the United States. But I knew someone who could get them legitimately, because they, you know, there are ways to do that legitimately if you are involved in, you know, various sorts of lab work. Okay. And so, I mean, it's not illegal.
Yeah, you didn't break the law. You just did. You just
you just had to know the right person to be able to get them. Right. And they weren't made in the U.S., so you had to have somebody that could get them from overseas. And so, you know, but of course, we had to buy a bunch of them. So between a bunch of us, we did. Okay, so I had 10 of them. and I had 10 of them before anybody could get them in the U.S. And I ran one on myself, because early on, the first week of January, I got a flu that was the worst thing, right after the holidays, the worst thing I'd ever had in my life. And I was convinced that I'd already had it. All right, because, you know, when the story started to come out, I just from the mathematics on some of the sequencing, I knew that this thing was in the wild in October of the prior year. And they were lying about that, too. And, of course, we later found out that that, in fact, was the case. And that was from the genomic drift between the stuff that got our country on the West Coast and in New York and in Italy. And between those two sets of genomes that were in the public data banks, you can calculate the drift between the two strains. And there was that dated the absolute latest that it was out in the wild into October of the prior year. All right. So they were lying about the fact it wasn't out there. And this is, I mean, it's just a mathematics problem.
Carl, can I break in here and ask a question? Because you're right, in October of the year before, Audrey, a lot of people out in Orland caught this nasty-ass bug. Audrey was one of them. It was sort of like you were talking about. She was out of the world for like 10 days.
Oh, yeah, I was flat on my ass.
I'm saying, I went to my chiropractor's right out there, and he was telling me they had to shut, everybody in the place got it, all shut down. This was, you know, 5 months before the shutdown. Nobody that got tested had the COVID antibodies, but not one of them got COVID. It was something almost like COVID that came through before. Is there another strain of something that you could give you the same sort of antibody, some other flu bug or something?
No, but what, as it turned out, now I was negative because that was why I wanted the test, was because I was convinced that I had already had it. And I wanted to verify that, because if in fact I did already have it, then I was immune and I wasn't scared at all. Okay, at that point, I mean, you know, I don't care. Right, it's kind of like getting the measles. If you've had the measles, you know, well, you don't go help people that have the measles. You could.
Well, that's what pissed me off. I could have gone and helped somebody because I had the antibodies.
Well, I'm just saying, you could be, you know, you could be a caregiver to somebody who has the measles if you've had the measles, because you're not going to get it again. So, you know, same thing with tuberculosis. What do we do with sanitariums, right? Same thing. So I wanted that information, and there wasn't any way to get it in the United States. So I went and put the effort in and sourced the stuff.
What do you say there? I went to my doctor, and he gave me the test, and he told me the next day, you got the antibodies, you're fine.
Well, I was negative, okay?
Okay.
So I'm like, okay, I haven't had it. Well, then later we found out that what was going around at the end of that prior year and the beginning of the first was H1N1, which was the same flu strain that killed all those people in 1918.
Well, that's what those people must have had out in Orland, same thing.
Oh, yeah, and it was, and believe me, that's, now, that was, you know, I mean, that was an evil flu bug, okay? But, I mean, I deserved it, because at the time, it was the end of the year, I was not doing good things from the standpoint of, you know, taking care of my own health. I was drinking more than I should be. I was in the process.
Wait a minute. Alcohol helps not get stuff. It sterilizes the glass, for God's sake.
Well, and only if it's hard liquor. If it's beer, it doesn't do so much. You know, so I mean, but I was burning the candle on every end there was, and I got pounded for it. And, you know, you could say, well, you know, you stupid F, you know, you deserve that, right? Well, I did.
I hate to say deserved. We'll say earned it.
So wait a minute. Teetotalers don't get a cold. I'm not so sure about that.
Yeah. So I mean, but that was the thing. But then after I got COVID, then I still had some of these tests left. Okay. So what everyone was saying was, well, you know, if you had COVID, then, you know, after 3 months, or 6 months or whatever it is, you know, your antibodies are going to wane and you can get it again, right? And so basically, you know, this was the scare tactic to get you to go take the shot if you already had it. So I started running tests on myself every 3 months, and I did this until I ran out of tests and I couldn't get any more of them. And then there was a period of time where you could buy them sourced out of Europe for quite some time, but eventually that supply dried up too.
Well, this dude made it to a year where he still had it. Still had the antibodies.
Chief, I had 2 years.
Wow.
And I still rang strongly positive on those tests. Okay. Now, I've never had it a second time. All right. Now, at this point, I'm out of tests. So I, you know, but I mean, they're just simple finger stick tests. They're easy.
I got it, you know, pretty early on. For me, it was a really nasty day and a half or so before, and then I just turned the corner and got better. So it wasn't awful. It was like a really, really bad cold/flu that I've had before. But you know, it sucked. But not having, you know, never got the shots. So whatever the immunity was conferred. I am telling you, over the years, I've been exposed so many times to people who, you know, would come back and say, by the way, you should probably check because I have it now, and, you know, I was around you. I've been exposed so many times to it and have never gotten it again.
Well, your ability, according to the Korean study that I read, the only one I ever saw was that detailed. They had one of these guys that was one of those spreader dudes.
Yeah, super spreaders.
And he said that the second he knew he had it, even a small little temperature, he said he was fine. He said every day the kid said, I would have played basketball every day. The second he knew he had it, your ability to spread dropped by like 90%.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a minute. It's sort of like, well, it's the same way with colds, right? You spread it before you even know you got it, and then as soon as you get it, you're almost not contagious.
Yeah, it's a very interesting... You know, very interesting situation in general. But I just the gaslighting and the BS that, you know, that was run on people with this is what really pisses me off. So,
well, I mean, plus it was insane. It's one thing to close places down for a week, then the next week saying, well, the Blue Jeans store has to stay closed, but the Walmart can be open to sell Blue Jeans. I mean, what are we doing to people? Plus, I already had it. I could have gone to a nursing home and served dinners at night. I'm not too good for that. They wasted me.
Yeah.
Plus, I'm here. I am getting bitched at if I don't have a mask on when I don't need one.
I mean, yeah. By the way, don't ever call it a mask. Call it a magic mask.
Yeah.
There you go,
Kevin. Are you going to the 90-degree ball game tomorrow?
90-degree ball game? No, I'm not. They're doing the men's and women's basketball team is doing a little skills competition over at Eddy Street Commons, which is adjacent to the campus, and they're doing that tonight. So I'm probably going to go over and hang out with that. And,
what skill are you showing off?
My trip to campus.
What skill are you showing off?
What skill am I showing off? Probably eating a cheeseburger at one of the joints over there. After
tell you what, that place we went to last year, that was really good.
Oh yeah, that was Brothers. That'll be pretty crowded though, so we'll see. We'll see where I wind up.
They don't have a seat reserved for you?
I demanded a nameplate and they didn't capitulate.
This is BS. I don't know how the hell they could do that. But anyway, Boise State.
I really do enjoy going to campus on football Fridays. I think that is fantastic. I don't even think I'm going to go tailgating. I probably know somebody who's in town, but nobody has said, hey, Kevin, I'm in town. Why don't you come on over? So, you know, my standard MO is to go see people when I am motivated to do so. Go over to campus and then ditch out of there about an hour before game time and watch in my recliner.
Carl, we had it was like 90-ish, and it's pretty rare. We were tailgating, and my brother, who makes his own beer, brought all his, like, stouts and stuff.
Yeah.
Everybody's drinking it going... great beer, wrong day. We need something a little lighter. It's like 90. We're roasted out here.
Oh no, I love that stuff. I don't care. You give me a stout. I don't care what time of day it is or whatever have you. I want it.
Boy, someone was
as I recall was back in my Better World Books days, and so we had a company tailgater. You know, got a nice van for you know everything that we did, and we had a spot in the parking lot, and. Really, nobody ever parked next to us. So Tom is coming along, and just by coincidence, because I knew he was coming in for the game, but by coincidence, they come turning the corner and coming up the row where everybody's tailgating and pull into that one spot.
Oh, there you go.
So there he is right there, and of course Dan gets out the homebrew, and we had some homebrewers where I work. So you know, it's like. You got homebrew? Cool, let's talk.
Well, he made this stuff. We used to have a bar up in the Buckingham, right? So, I mean, it's a private club, and it was a bar in there. So, Dan would bring his cooler down on the train, and he'd put the beer in the bar, and we'd drink his beer coming off the workout. We knew everybody in the place. And, you know, the bartenders, they wouldn't sell any of their stuff. Well, he still sold some people's stuff. And then everybody drink Dan's beer and leave the bartender $20. They thought it was great. Well, one night, the mayor's in there, Mayor Daley. And Dan used to work out every Saturday when the club was open on Saturday. And the only other guy in there would be Mayor Daley. So the two of them would talk all day, right? And Daley was real friendly. I mean, he knew everybody, so I'd always talk with him, but I was just never there as much on weekends. And so Dan's serving up his homebrew. But this is like the 8% stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And then the real stuff. And he says to the mayor, you know, careful, that stuff's like 8%. What do you mean? It's pretty good. Give me another one. All of a sudden, the mayor's got some big deal going that night, and now he's trashed. Hey, I tell you how much I love the White Sox. I'm going, uh-oh. If he thinks he's going to go give a speech, he ended up, I think he must have gone home. There's no way. But Dan kept saying, you know, this stuff's not like regular beer. What do you mean? It tastes like regular beer. Give me another one. Oops. That didn't work out so hot, but
but you know that one day over at campus, Dan made some friends, some homebrew buddies, and we had a good old time. So it was kind of cool.
If you want to see two people sit there and talk for hours, put two homebrew guys together, it's like a couple of old Italian ladies talking in pasta recipes or something. They will talk for hours. Just Kevin. I'm sure we'll be. Going back and forth with the game. Boise State used to be real good. Now they're not, eh?
Well, Boise State was a playoff team last year. So our buddy Dave Murphy is a former football coach, and so Dave is always the guy who, like every football coach, is nervous about every damn thing possible.
Oh yeah.
So he, you know, he's already sent out. Oh, they're going to be really tough. They're going to be hard to beat. You know, all the things that a football coach would tell you. And I will say the Irish are probably going to kick ass and win by four touchdowns. So, yeah, Boise State is not as good as they were last year.
They still have the blue field.
They still have the blue field, but you know they're not making the field at Notre Dame blue.
Who was their big benefactor up there? Who gave them all the dough? Like the guy in Oregon, they launched him into the next century, and then all of a sudden, no, they're not. Somebody gave them a lot of money, didn't they? Was it Nike?
I don't know. I don't know. I only know, the Nike fellow for Oregon and T. Boone Pickens for Oklahoma State.
Really? Well, Texas A&M's got a bunch of dough, just some endowments, right?
Yeah.
All right, bud. Well, you have a nice weekend, and we'll talk.
All right.
S&P futures up 8, and NASDAQ is up 30. Hey, Carlson, what are we going to do about the labor numbers? Yesterday they said Chicago people came out with alternative numbers and somebody else, and they think the unemployment's the same number. And what are you seeing?
Well, the only so-called official thing we have, of course, was the ADP report, right, which came out on schedule because that's not the government.
Yep.
The interesting so two things of note about the ADP report. First one is now I don't think ADP used to do this. ADP issued a revision to their previous report. Now, ADP's employment report is according to ADP. Now, you know, again, they rejiggered this a few years ago because they were frequently very different than what the BLS said, so they're, you know, trying to track them instead of the other way around, which is kind of stupid. I think the number of checks that came out of your check printer is a number that is... it's not really subject to a revision, okay?
You're right. When they were so far off from the feds, they started monkeying with theirs to try and match up with the Fed.
Yeah, which is dumb.
Yeah.
Okay, but that's what they did. And so, I mean, and to me, you know, I mean, I used to have to cut checks, obviously. Duh. I had a company. We did our own payroll, so I knew, that of course, I knew exactly how many people we had that, you know, that worked at the company. But I could tell you, you know, all I had to do was look at the checkbox. Okay, what was the starting check number for, you know, for this month? What was the end of check number? Right? I mean, it's, how hard is this?
Did you have the, for those that don't even know, when you go get a corporate or a business checking account, you can get any kind of checks you want, right? But I just get the bigger checks because I use them in the office, and you know, you can read them better and write them better. Well, there actually is one where it's the employment ledger, where between the name and where you write the check out, there's a little worksheet that says how much the gross is, how much you're sending to the IRS, how much you're sending to the state, and how much you're sending, you know, whatever the other stuff. So there's like three or four lines. And then it totals out to the bottom, and that's when you write the check for. You can actually do that all manually.
Well, yeah, well...
I mean, people used to, anyway.
Well, yeah, the ones that I had were double ledger. So for paychecks, the employee got the, you know, the top, which was the actual check, and the stub, which is the second one. The third one had all the stuff on it that I can't give the employee. Okay, so the...
Knows how much tax you take out and everything.
careful there. True and false. Yes, for FICA, for, you know, your state, your federal tax.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
If you've got a city tax, whatever. But there are other cost center taxes that are in the check that you're not allowed to give to the employee. And, for example, the unemployment deduction... The tax that you have to pay to the city and the state
or the one they pay?
Well, no. There's a federal one. There's a federal one as well, FUTA and SUTA. You cannot put those on the stub. It's actually a crime to do that.
But, I mean, the person pays one unemployment tax, and they pay a Medicare and a...
Well, no. There's so FICA is you know, Social Security and Medicare. Okay.
Right.
Those, the part that the employee has deducted from their check is on the stub. Okay. Along with their federal and state taxes.
Okay.
Their income taxes. That stuff's on the stub. But as a business, you not only have those the other halves, okay, that if you're self-employed, you get to pay both, so you know what they are.
Yeah, you know, right with it. It's like 15%.
Yeah, it's 15% from the first dollar. It's nasty, right? But on top of that, there are also taxes that are part of the cost of employment that, as an employer, you are prohibited from putting on the employee's stuff because you would be implying that it's coming out of their check. Well, it is, duh. You would give them that money if you didn't have to give it to the government.
well, most, you know, it actually, I had this argument, discussion with my nephew, and we're talking about hospitalization.
Right.
And I said, well, you know, and it, you know what? He wasn't wrong, which is kind of weird, but in kind of an odd sort of way. I mean, I would think that if it doesn't really matter to me whether I pay you $100,000 and $24,000 for your insurance, if I didn't have to pay, if the insurance wasn't on me, it's kind of coming out of your check, right? You would think the break even for the employer would be 124, right? But as my nephew said, though, if that's true, if somebody offered you $100,000 plus insurance for a job, and you say, wait a minute, my wife's a judge, I don't need the insurance, nobody ever says, okay, I'll make it 110, do they? I don't think anybody ever does. Why?
Well, and that is one of the problems that these distortions put into the system. Okay, is that that differential, yes, it should matter. Okay, because that's real.
But people don't ask for it. I mean,
I understand.
Which is even weirder. They don't even.
Well, you got to be careful here because there are laws that you can get into quite a bit of trouble with if you violate them when it comes to ERISA and stuff like this. And so there are things you have as an employer. There are things you have to be very careful with if you were to go down that road. I don't know. I mean, I haven't been an employer in, you know, it's been well over 20 years at this point, right? So, I mean, you know, it's 25 actually, close to. So, I mean, it's, you know, things have changed. I'm sure things have changed. And the other thing is that a lot of this is also state specific. And so it's, you can't just say, well, you know, this is how it is, because that might be the case in Tennessee or Illinois, but it's not the case in Florida or whatever have you. So there's a lot of things that are very situationally specific. But in the general sense, so for example, one of the things that used to be the case, and again, I don't know if it still is that in order for you to be able to, as an employer, deduct above the line the health insurance expense that, you know, for the part that the employer pays, you must not assess anyone within your company more than half of the total cost. And in addition to that, you can't individually rate them on their payroll deduction. Now, that may or may not still be true, but it was at the time.
But we ended up, when we had these plans, because we used to have a lot of people working, and a lot of people did a lot of future stuff, and we had people trading for us. But we ended up doing, especially when we went with Empower, we did the, you know, pretty much the, what I would consider to be the total package. We bought people really good insurance. But if you wanted to increase your workman's comp, or you wanted to get a Cadillac dental plan or something, you had to pony up for that.
Yeah.
Or if you wanted, you know, I think our life insurance was 50. If you wanted 550, you know, you had to pony up for that. So we would give the base package, which was good enough really for anybody. But unless I suppose if you had a family, you probably want $1 million of life insurance.
Well,
so that was on you.
Yeah, you might want more. Right.
Yeah, that would be on you. So I don't think we ever ran into any issues like that.
Well, no, that's a different situation. But for example, I had people that were working for me that were very young. And you know, no known issues, and were extremely cheap, okay, from a standpoint to, you know, to have very good health coverage. On the other hand, I also had people that were significantly overweight and older, had some pre-existing conditions. All those people were individually rated. Now the problem is, I could not legally take a different deduction between those two people out of their checks.
Oh, I know. We had. Old farts and four girls in childbearing age. How do you think we were doing?
Well, yeah, and that's the other thing too, is if you've got a woman that's of childbearing age, then the premiums are much higher because she might have a baby.
Okay? Yeah, Sarah and whatever the lady name were, they cost more than anybody else.
Right. So these are, and God forbid if you know those two intersect, then oh boy, bend over. But the thing is. So one of the things that's a serious problem, and you know, I rail about this thing about the differentiation between costs all the time. One of the things that's actually built into the way ERISA was written, and again, this may have changed, but this was the way the law was at the time, is that essentially the 18-year-old young man who's working for me is paying 3/4 of the 40-year-old overweight woman's health insurance in the form of a lower hourly rate. His paycheck is essentially being docked to cover that other person.
Well, people say,
oh, no, not so. Excuse me, when I've got one person whose monthly premium is $60 and I got another person at $600, oh yes, he is.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get at. These are all fallouts of a system that is bloated, right?
Well, they're fallouts of organized. Now, at a certain level, because of the way ERISA, this is an actual legal requirement. All right, so this is not a a group of insurance companies getting together and colluding with the hospitals and the doctors.
They could have colluded with ERISA.
Well, but I'm saying, yeah. but the thing is, the federal government is exempt from antitrust law. Okay, so it's not a felony in that instance, because I'm required to do it by law. I'm not doing it in collusion to screw people and try to, you know, fix prices. I'm doing it because the federal government requires that I do it. That's a different situation from what you have going on internally. But yes, it's all part of the same thing, Chief. And this is why the only way you are going to solve this is to get all of that out of the system. And the problem with doing it is that if you take it out, you're gonna take 15% of the currently employed base, and they're gonna be laid off and fired.
Well, this is my wacky background, which is in economics and cost accounting. When the price of stuff is artificially high, which it is, it's just a question of which piece of the silly putty you're gonna squeeze it out at.
Yeah.
And when I started trading, I won't even give the date on that. I put 10 grand in my account. I hadn't made a trade. Went down to the floor, and the first day, I think I traded 5 contracts, which was $5, right? First stop picked up my health insurance.
Yeah.
And I started to get, you know, a little better. Finally, I have a clerk. It cost me $75 for the clerk and his family, for God's sake. But at those prices, nobody cared if the 50-year-old guy paid the same amount as the 25-year-old guy. The 25-year-old guy was going to bitch at $75 a month. And the idea was, okay, when I get to be 60, I'll have the same deal. Well, that hasn't worked out quite like that, because now the costs are so excessive that you can almost pinpoint, not really, because skinny people die too. I mean, you can't always just say the fat guy is going to be more of a, you know, on average, if you're not in a better shape, you probably. That doesn't mean you're not going to get. You're not a. You know. You didn't like one of Lou's buddies was a pilot and sun beating down on you up high, and all of a sudden you got cancer at 45, and you're in the best shape anybody in the world. I mean, this stuff happens, but now it's gotten so expensive that everybody's getting reamed every which way but sideways because the cost is too high. If all this cost got back to where it ought to be. You know, if people, instead of paying, you know, 30 grand for the chemo treatment, were paying 500, which it probably costs, none of this would be a problem, I don't think.
Well, yeah, well, sure, there would be some issues.
There's always going to be a problem, but, you know what I'm saying?
There's always going to be issues, right? But the thing is that what we have to look at, what we have to solve, and you know, is... As I pointed out, the column that I sent around on the mailing list, the one that was posted up yesterday, if you think about what this really comes down to, it's this. You go to the grocery store. There are no prices on the shelves. You put the food in your cart. You get up to the checkout. Unknown to you, there's a scale underneath, you know, right in front of where you stand, right? It weighs you. All right. Then it asks for your health insurance card. You can't scan anything until you put those two things in there. You put those two things in, and then it asks you how you're going to pay, and you have to give it that too. So you know, your credit card, whatever have you. All right. Now you scan all your stuff. It still doesn't give you a price. You put all the food in the basket. You go out to the car. At this point, once you've left the building, you're obligated to pay. You can't say, "Oh, I don't want that."
take that shot back out of my ass.
Yeah, you took it, right?
Yeah.
So. Now you actually have a debt. Now you have to pay. And as you get to your car, your phone bings and says, that was $423.56. All right. Now, the problem is this. The grocery store colluded with your health insurance company. The person that has an EBT card that's behind you paid half of what you did, right? Because it was an EBT card and it wasn't a credit card. All right. And they know that. You've got the wrong insurance company. Well, your price is, you know, 30% higher, or you don't have any health insurance.
You don't have anything, you're really screwed.
Then it's three times the price, right? And all of this. Now look, if you tried to do this, and then, by the way, you say, well, F that crap, I'm not going to put up with that garbage. You go to the next grocery store down the street, and they're doing the same damn thing, except their criteria is a little different. So, you know, maybe your total bill is higher, maybe it's lower from one to the other, but you have no way to know until after the fact. And the thing is this, if you tried to do this as a grocery store or as a gas station, same kind of thing, right? Who's your car insurance company? Things like this, right? If you try to do this, somebody would open another grocery store next door in any kind of competitive environment. They would put prices on the shelves. All the people who got screwed in the first one would show up at the second, and the second guy would be out of business.
Well, we know it's clearly not a competitive, but
the reason it doesn't happen, Chief, in the health market is that there's a gun in your face, because in any situation where there isn't, that's exactly what would occur.
Well, I think we've got two political games here going, and there's a difference, and you know, this is my observation, which is just, you know, some schlump from the South Side. Right now you have the Dems and Republicans fighting about everything, right?
Well, yeah.
But, you know, it's whatever. I guess that's what they do. But the healthcare stuff, there is, to the extent that there's ever agreement on this show, everybody, I think, and this is my skill or my mess up, I always take things down to the lowest level. Okay, how much is somebody paying for this pill or this shot or this piece of chemo?
Yeah.
How much does it really cost? Is it at any kind of markup that would ever make it in a competitive world? And the answer is no. I'm going to say, okay, that's the problem. Let's just multiply it by 20 million products and 20 million people every day, and that's your problem. You got to solve it.
There's the issue, right?
You got to solve it at the base. Otherwise, you can hem and haw. And right now, we have the two parties appear that neither one really wants to address any of the issues, the patent laws, the monopolies, the people buying other people's crap. Do they even have the patents in the first place? All the stuff we talked about the other day on the show. Yeah. And is even the right person have the monopoly? Or do they buy it from somebody else and didn't do anything? And what's that all about? So we're essentially buying and selling a monopoly piece given to you by the government that the other person didn't even own in the first place. Well, that's cool. So now all of a sudden you've got the Dems that they don't even know what their policy is, or Republicans don't even know what their policy is. But it seems to me, by watching both of them, is the Dems want to somehow fund stuff for people that can't afford it themselves, which nobody can afford it themselves, really. If you don't have insurance, I don't care. You're the richest man on earth. Well, maybe Musk could do it. But
I was going to say Elon. I don't.
Well,
think
I'm saying, but most people, yeah. Carl, I have a feeling you're fairly comfortable. I don't know that you can write a check for a 3-week stay in a hospital without any insurance. Easily. I'm sure you could, but easily.
Actually, if I was called upon to do that by getting it in the back door, I might decide to play the game of scoreboards instead.
Yeah, I'm saying that bill would be $600,000 or something.
Well,
I mean,
I might be angry enough to say, okay, I'm going to cashier myself, but I'm getting some of you first.
But what I'm saying is, and on the Republican side, and first of all, I'm not going to walk up to any Republican and say they want somebody to die, but their action appears to be not our problem. Give it back to the states. And what I see, and the reason why I'm pissed off at both sides, even though Kevin accused me of never being in the middle, what I'm pissed off at both sides is I think Kevin probably talks to more people than I do in a certain age group and stuff, but I talk to different age groups up and down. And what I see is people opting out of the system. They don't have any insurance. They're not. I mean, we can yell all we want about citizens people that aren't citizens that are paying whatever. Oh, they shouldn't have medical stuff. I'll tell you this: people I know in the Hispanic community, they got to be dead before they go to a doctor. There's no way they're going, you know, the same way everybody else does and expect somebody to go in a good hospital and get stuff done.
But Chief, it doesn't matter.
But I'm saying there's people that are opting out, and I don't.
Yeah.
Whoever they are, they're not all Hispanic. They're not all whatever. I mean,
no.
They're just opting out, and I don't think that's a solution for either party. Although some people would say, if I never saw him and he died, what do I care? I guess I don't. There's not too many people like that, but there are some. I never saw him, so he's dead. So what?
Well, the problem that you have with what we're doing right now is that this is the classic, you know, as I've pointed out, the difference between socialism and communism is simply whether or not you've seen the gun yet. Okay?
Yeah.
The socialist has it under the couch. He just hasn't shown it to you. He's got it, but he hasn't shown
it to
you.
Well, socialist can be in name only. I mean, hell, it was the National Nazis were the National Socialist Party. They weren't socialists at all.
God. Right. Well, so socialism in name is not socialism. I'm talking about in fact, okay? And, I mean, if you look at what happens when there is no gun, you only have to look at what happened with Bradford in the Plymouth Colony.
Yeah.
Okay? Where they decided to be socialist by agreement. There was no gun.
But the Swedes get away with it. Some people get away with it. They want to do
Well, actually, the Swedes don't really get away. The Swedes are not... I understand that there's a lot of people that, well, that's a very socialist country and a very socialist economy. Well, not really, because everyone pays and everyone gets, okay? And it is essentially impossible for you to play freeloader
It's somewhat of a blend.
Well, I understand that.
Yeah, but you know what? 79% of the people in Sweden work. 58% here work.
Well, that's exactly the point.
Yeah.
Everyone gets, but everyone pays.
Yeah.
Okay. And the other end.
Well, I'm saying, as a group, they've sort of decided to go down that road. They're homogeneous enough to where it kind of works for them, kind of.
Well, but Chief, there's, you know, well, it didn't always, okay? Sweden came very close to having an economic and geopolitical, you know, social political collapse.
I am not defending the system.
And all I'm saying is that there is no set of government that doesn't have some element of this, because you'd like to have a road out in front of your house, right? And somehow that road has to be paid for. It is a complete impossibility for you to have 15 different water companies in a town. and choice of 15 different, where do you want your tap put? And I can move it anytime I want. There are things where that doesn't work. And so as a result, there's always an element of this in any geopolitical organization. Always. What we really argue about is, where's the line, right?
Well,
it's not, does it exist?
There's different views on this. And this is one argument I have with... I'm going to break here at some point. It's one argument I have with a lot of people who insist on putting one or two names on this. It's either capitalist or it's socialist. Well, that's total BS. There's a million lines in the middle, and I mean, I would say in our place here now, I think we are getting, and this is not Hitlerish, this is not anything else. Our system is becoming very fascist, economically. We're not putting people on railroad cars, but economically, and their system is, you know, it's probably a German system long before they're even fascists. They seem to be very comfortable with three or four companies in every industry with their nose up the ass of government. Banks own the stocks. Government kind of runs the banks. And everybody's happy with this, except some 25-year-old who's got some entrepreneurial bent and he can't get anywhere. Or a young lawyer that can't make any money until he's 50. So,
the problem with that...
There's a lot of problems with it. I don't like it at all. Matter of fact, I thought it was horrific. But it's not socialist. It's something. I mean, I don't know what it is.
No, but the problem with this, ultimately, is that all innovation comes from that crazy kid sitting in his basement.
There's a lot of old inventors.
I'm saying is why do we have electric lights? Well, because Edison sat in his little workshop, right?
Yeah.
And tried, what was it, 1,200 times before he actually got one that worked? And the thing is, that sort of thing, is there some of this that comes out of organized, government-funded?
Sure.
Yes, there is. But if you look at the things that really move the ball, what has moved the ball in the last, say, 30 years? Okay. Good luck with that.
I mean, the entrepreneurship is not necessarily some basis of competition. It's some basis of you wanting to do the best you can. But there's an urge there. I mean, why does somebody work out all winter so he can have a better year in softball? Because he wants to. You know, you can't just If you don't want to, you can't make somebody work out to do something they don't want to do. I mean,
that is ultimately the problem.
Yeah.
Is you can make me show up, but you can't make me work to my potential.
Right.
Right. And that's and ultimately, this is where the stagnation and collapse comes from. I think one of the things that I column this morning, because you got this ADP thing, and of course, the market's response to that was to go up.
Hey, why don't we go to break and we'll continue your thought. And oh, by the way, the two things that came out this week that people say are like the labor report, maybe you can assess. One of them is the Fed of Chicago came out with something, didn't they? Said the unemployment rate is 4.3. It's a little higher, but it's not 4.4 or something.
Well, yeah, there's some other data that you can interpret that is kind of the BLS, sort of the BLS-ish.
Anyway, Spoos are up 8, NASDAQ futures up 31. I'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jacks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. SP futures up 8, NASDAQ futures up 31. Looks like the administration is doing the best they can to put holes on money because of the shutdown that they don't want to give to people. That's always nice of them. They're putting a hold on $2.1 billion in Chicago infrastructure projects. And when we go back, we're going to ask Carl, what exactly does that do to you if you've already spent the money? Right? They're not going to pay you? I mean, this is freaking insanity. I can't even go there with this. But anyway, we'll go around the world here. Europe, DAX down 45. Down, wow, 0.2%. FTSE up 52. Now, the DAX and the CAC around were up a bunch yesterday, and the FTSE wasn't. But now today, they're up 52.5%. CAC around down 7, call that flat. So not much going on there. Asia, Nikkei up another 832, 1.8%. These guys are finding the joy of pouring money in the system and seeing what happens. Hang Seng down 146.5. They have been up. Shanghai up 20.5, and I never thought that market was going to go anywhere. Russell thinks they're going out of business, but I hope he's not short, for God's sake. 10-year, 4.08, so I have to believe that when we get this month's money supply numbers, it's going to be a shocker just about anybody. The Bund unchanged, 2.69. Oil, remember we thought last week, I said, hey, this could be a breakout. It got to 65. 60.76. Wait, this is the lowest part of the range I've seen now in 6 months. Usually it was 63 plus or minus 2. Now we're almost minus 3. Gold up 1740, not quite 3900, which it was yesterday, but 3885. It's no signs of going down here, but this one here. Silver up $1.11, 4748. God, my people in silver are happy campers. I wish we had more, though. I wish we had more. The euro up is at 117. That's kind of a recent high. British pound 134. To trade here really would be long euro, short the pound. That's where the big spread has been. It's not just us. The whole world does not revolve around us, much as we may think so. Bitcoin down 584, but still 120,000, close to records. Ricky, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Hey, morning, Chief. It's currently 735 here in Chicago. We're looking at 60 degrees right now with a high of 85. Very warm with plenty of sunshine. Drought conditions persist today. Tonight will be clear and warm with a low of 69 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 75 right now with a high of 102. Hot with plenty of sun. Caution is advised if outside for too long. Tonight will be clear with a low of 71 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, Iman Kennedy from Monroe's, 29 minutes. We're looking at about 44 minutes. Iman Edens from Lane Cook, 42 minutes, Eisenhower from Wolf, Dan Ryan from 95th, 27 minutes, and Leslie Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 37 minutes. Today we don't have any MLB games, but yesterday the Cubs beat Padres 3-1, so that's good. 49ers beat Rams 26-23 yesterday as well. The Bears are on bye week this week, but this Sunday, October 5th, we got Titans at Cardinals at 3:05 p.m. Back to you guys.
Hey, Carl, I looked this up this morning, and I've been trying to be nice. And trying to be not near as political maybe as we've become a little bit, because I don't think our job is to help people make some money and learn some things. But I did finally listen, which I didn't want to listen to, those speeches to the generals. Carl, I almost had to reach for the air sickness bag. Explain to me this. How, for those that don't know, we had one guy up there saying we're not going to be woke anymore. If the girls can't do as many push-ups as the guys, we don't want them. Okay, well, you know, 6.5% of all Air Force pilots are women. 12% of all Navy pilots. Now, these people have gone through some of the most intensive training everybody does on Earth. And we're going to listen to a guy who got out of Vietnam with fake bone spurs telling me that these people are not, they're not worthy? Why do I have to listen to this, Carl? Carl, are you there? Did you dump me?
Oh, sorry about that. No, I will.
Why would I have to listen to anybody say something like that?
Well, I'll give you my view on it, which is rather different than yours.
Well, I'm just saying.
I don't think it has anything to do with, you know. I know people. You know, he put the label woke on there, right? All right. So I mean, you can't say that the media did that. He did it because he said it, right? Texas, you know, came out of his mouth. I listened to the whole speech. I support getting rid of this concept of Department of Defense and calling it what it is, because people in the military exists to kill the other guy's dudes, if it comes to it, if you have to use them, and break their stuff. That's what they're for. Okay? The idea that they are for any other purpose is a fraud perpetrated upon the American public and perpetrated upon the budgetary process in the United States, and I'm glad it's going away. You would
agree with these guys. The idea, nobody ever thought that the Defense Department was not for waging war. The idea was we only wage war to defend ourselves, even though we have done it other times. That is the idea we're trying to progress. If you say the art of war, it means you're going to, that you're there for war's sake. It's a different, just a semantics difference, which
I
don't like.
I think my opinion is that that words mean things, okay? That people make decisions as to the words they're going to use, knowing this, and that public. I mean, you know, you look at what happened during Vietnam with Cronkite and the way that the Tet Offensive was reported. Okay, the fact of the matter is that the NVA were out of fighting age men. They were handing guns to 10-year-old children and telling them to go shoot at us with zero training. All right, because
the Japanese did the same thing.
Well, I understand that, but you know what? They got mowed down like dogs.
Yeah, so did the Japanese.
And so did the Japanese. And you know what? But the reporting that came back over here to the United States was not, they're out of dudes, this war's over. It was, we're terrible, we're monsters. By the way, our guys are getting cut up like, you know, like rock, paper, scissors. None of which was true. Okay? None of that was true.
Well, now, a lot of our
now,
guys...
But the thing is this, Chief. It was done to drive a narrative, and that's not a new problem. It's not a new thing. And to the extent that any part of that is cut back, I approve of it. Now, here's the basic, you know, I have a very good friend of mine. He's a retired Marine.
Okay? There isn't anybody dumb enough to think that an airplane with about 58 bombs on a damn thing isn't for messing with somebody like really bad.
I understand it, but here's the thing. There is, so I agree that when you have a 350-pound general or other flag officer running around, that this is not what we ought to be from a standpoint of the military.
I didn't see any fat guys in that room.
I did.
Okay, so what, I mean,
here's my point. Discipline is part of the game if you're going to be in that line of business.
That should probably go for the cabinet and the presidency too.
Hello. Okay, but we have a civilian-run military. We have civilians are in charge of the military. That's the way our system works. And the reality is that discipline, you want the chain of command to be honored, You want it to be, if you get a lawful order, you're going to obey it. You're not going to be trying to subvert it. You're not going to be trying to find some way to get around it and do it your way. Uh-uh. It's a lawful order. You follow it. That's the end of the conversation. And if you can't do that, you get out. And the problem that we have had to a large degree within the intelligence services, within parts of the military services, is that people don't believe that that's the case. There was a guy, I just saw, he posts a video, okay, in uniform, which, by the way, right there is a violation of the UCMJ, going after his command, his chain of command in uniform is absolutely forbidden.
This is, at some point, this is a, well, I want to talk more about the labor numbers, but this is a subject for another day. When in a chain of command, if you see something so egregious, does somebody have to say something?
Chief?
You're saying never. I say, after living through the Vietnam stuff, somebody should have said something a hell of a lot sooner.
Okay, you do it through the chain of command. You, as a person with it, and the military is different than the civilian world.
I understand that.
It just is. It's the same thing. If I had somebody that was working for me when I ran my company, and they had a serious problem with what I was doing as the boss, all right, they could bring it into my office. Now, they may or may not get the result they want. I will listen, but I may decide that, in my opinion, they're wrong. The conversation's over.
There were people.
You take it outside of my office and you put it out in the public, you're fired.
Okay, Robert McNamara is probably directly responsible for how many people dying in this country and other places. So you go to his office and he's going to say, get out of here. Okay, at some point, what are we doing here? I mean, I went through this whole mess. I'm a little older than you. When was Kent State? I mean, people were so... I don't think anybody who wasn't there has any real idea of the generation gap between the World War II people that were heroes all over the damn place and everybody looked up to, and I miss every one of those guys. They were real guys. And you couldn't get them to talk about it because in their mind, the heroes didn't come back. We were lucky enough to come back. We did our job, and here we are.
I get that.
So now all of a sudden, we got this Vietnam War, and people think, well, this is the same thing. When I walked into my, I forget what year it was in high school, Kent State, on the blackboard was National Guard 4, Hippie 0. That's how detestable people thought about anybody who protested what the government was doing in this war. And as month after month went by, virtually everybody, even World War II decorated people, said, what the bleep are we doing over there? And who's running this mess?
Chief, I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm saying that you can consider this a bug, okay, in the way that our system works. I consider it a feature. Because the last thing I want is the guys in the military having control over that command and control infrastructure.
I don't either. I mean, but somewhere along the line, you can only see something go down. You can only see some guy unscrewing the screw on the bottom of the boat. At one point, do you say, "Hey, idiot, you can't do that"? I mean,
then you resign your commission.
Okay, well, you still don't want your buddies to die, do you? I'm not talking about everybody being in charge. You know that,
Chief. I understand that, but then listen. This is what I'm saying. Look, actions have consequences. If you judge,
right, but the thing I was talking about the other day is the guy took a shot out at every woman in the force.
I listened to what he said.
All right, maybe through your filter, he said if women can't do as many push-ups as guys, they got no business in there. That's exactly what he said.
Actually, that's not what he said. He said if women can't meet the male standard,
which they never can.
That is not true.
All right.
That is not true.
Okay.
The male standard is not,
I'm back
is
to
not
the,
100 points.
I'm back,
it's 60.
I'm back to the only real argument I ever have with you and Kevin is you, and maybe Kevin or maybe me, should read exactly what he said.
I did.
Okay. And what I'm saying to the both of you, it doesn't make any difference. I've heard 40 people talk about his speech. Hey, if women can't do the same stuff as guys, they got no business here. That's what people heard. And that's what he meant to say. Whether he said it, I don't know why you guys are so bright and don't get that.
No, wait a minute. No, that is what he said, and it is what he meant. It's the way you interpreted it.
Oh, I can say stuff And if you write my, and if FINRA comes by and looks at it, they're going to say, "What's the problem?" Yet I can give an impression, or I can give a wink, or I can do something. Everybody knows exactly what I'm talking about, and it's totally different than what I said. Why don't you guys get that,
Chief? Look,
everybody I talked to that listened to that, that told me about it before I even listened to it. Hey, this guy says women got no business in there because they can't do as many push-ups.
It's not what he said. It's not what the actual speech was. And by the way, if you are actually in the service, okay, or if you've been in the service, then you know that's not what he said. Because you've taken the PT test and you know what it is.
Let's talk about you guys refuse to see the difference between the splitting hairs of what you think somebody wrote and what people heard, and I'm telling you there's a difference. And I know I'm not going to get anywhere with anybody with this,
I'm telling you that he didn't do that for public consumption. He did it for the generals to tell them that this is the way that the rules are going to be. And the fact that the media has grabbed it and turned it into whatever it is they want it to be and fed it to people is nothing new.
The mouthpiece of this administration is not what President, whatever he is, says. It's Fox and Newsmax.
I get that.
Okay, and
guess what?
I had to listen to 15 minutes the other day.
And CNN spin.
Okay.
Which is.
I had to listen to 15 minutes the other day about the assassination attempt on the president because the escalator went off when Trump's guy kicked it.
Yeah, I saw that one too, which is totally stupid.
So, that's what people are listening to. Anyway, I
understand.
All right, so should we take any? Now we've got S&P futures up 2, NASDAQ up 6. They were more. Any story that the Chicago Fed, they came up with the unemployment rate up a couple tenths of a point, but not enough to make it 4.4. So that's what they came out. There was two studies though. One was the Chicago Fed. Who was the other one? ATP. There's some other outfit. Oh, Challenger Grand Christmas.
Challenger. Well, that's and Joel's came out as well, which is one of the inputs that some of these alternative guys use. Right. All right. So here's the problem, in a nutshell, with the labor reports. We've seen these very large revisions. Okay. Now, if you remember the January report for this year, which came out in February, which was right after Trump was inaugurated, the January report has the baseline revisions for the non-institutional working age population. Right? It's they guess all throughout the year, and then in January they correct it. So if you look at the January number, January over January.
But there was some big correction in April or something this year, March, wasn't there?
Well, that's a different thing. Okay. The non-institutional, and again, these are on the unadjusted population survey, which, as we've talked about 100 times, is the only one I use. The non-institutional working age population is essentially the birth rate 16 years ago. All right. So it's the birth rate shifted back 16 years ago, or at least it should be, right? Because that's how it works. It's everybody who's non-institutionalized. So you were born,
you mean the sex rate leads into the institutional population rate? Well,
right,
yeah.
Right, exactly. By the way,
I think most people could put two and two together there.
I wonder how that happened. Right. And minus the number of people who die. Okay, which, because people die. All right. So if you end up in a nursing home or you're in jail, you don't count. But other than that, if you're 16 plus, you do count. All right? So last year, 2024, that number was 5 million when the benchmark revision came out. That is an impossibly large number. There has not and people have said for a long time that the labor report does not capture illegal immigrants. Oh, yes, it does. Okay, because that number, there is, you cannot find 16 years ago a more than doubling of the baby boom of the baby rate, birth rate that normally happens.
Hey,
maybe the
lights went out that month or something.
Normally it's about 2 million. Okay, the
the time across the year, year over year, a little more than 2 million. And all of a sudden, we get a 5 million print.
Why do we get these huge revisions in censuses every couple
of
years?
Well, the point being, Chief, that this 5 million people, three of those, logically, were illegal immigrants that came in during Biden and were paroled and therefore were able to work, okay? Now, essentially all, 95%+ of the people who claim asylum and get paroled when Biden was in office, when that finally gets its way through the courts, they're ruled inadmissible, the claim was a fraud, and they're supposed to leave. Okay, now of course they don't, but all right. But people say those people don't show up in the job data. Oh, yes, they do. Now, here's the problem. Now Trump's throwing them out. All right. And some of them are voluntarily leaving because they
know
they're
not throwing them out. They're voluntarily. They can't wait to get out. They're afraid.
Well, some of them are leaving voluntarily. He's throwing some out, and some are leaving
voluntarily. And you got what's-her-name. I don't even want to go into it. Commercials about people should get up and leave.
Chief, leave the politics out of this. I'm talking about the
it's kind of impossible. It's in front of your face all day.
We're talking about the impact on the jobs numbers and the policy error that the Fed is about to make. All right, the Federal Reserve did nothing about the inflationary impact in assets that was caused by throwing the floodgates open and having those people show up in the jobs
report.
What do you
mean did nothing? What do you mean did nothing? They caused it.
What they didn't do was put their foot on the stomp on the system liquidity. They did the opposite. Okay, during the last few years.
Carl, this is absolutely
now,
intentional.
I'm not saying it isn't intentional. I'm saying this is what they did. Now, there is screaming, including from this clown that Trump appointed, okay, who's, oh, well, we should have cut, 75 basis points yesterday, and rates should be at 1%, and da-da-da-da. Yeah, okay. Now what they're doing is they're saying that the fall-off in the hiring rate, which is just taking this back out because you've got people that are leaving, which means they're going to come out of that workforce. Now we won't have the actual number, the actual delta on this until this coming February, because it'll be the January report is the one where this baseline revision is. So we're not going to have this actual number for another 4 or 5 months. But if they act on what they're seeing in the data that they have without that baseline, and you can bet that they're, just listen to all the screaming that's going on in all the media, okay? Oh, they need to cut rates. Oh, this weak report from ADP, that was a negative number. We have to cut rates. And, oh, by the way, the shutdown is going to be even worse. Da-da-da-da-da.
Well, Carol, they all have drank the Kool-Aid. Somehow or another, if you drop rate, everything is good for everybody, even though it isn't. They don't know that. They couldn't pass a day of... If you and I gave an economics class, there wouldn't be any one of them that got any above an F.
I was going to say, it would all be Fs.
Yeah.
Here's the problem. If they do this, this is exactly the policy error and the misread from a different cause, but it's the same misread that happened in the 1970s. And that secondary spike... And I actually heard one of the Fed guys talking about this. So it's not entirely unknown to the people in the room.
That's why I'm telling you it's intentional. It's not.
Well, I understand.
It's intentional on their part, and they get away with it because there's cluelessness on our part.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing. If this labor slowdown was real and a result of economic conditions, it would also be reflected in GDP, which it isn't, okay?
What do you mean? The GDP in the Weimar Republic was spectacular.
I'm saying it isn't. And, guess why? Duh, right? Because it's nominal.
What do you think the GDP would be in the last 25 years if we raised the medical piece of the CPI up to 20, and if we raised the crap that they use on owner's equivalent rent, if they fixed that? I'm going to we've had probably 3 years of growth in the last 25 years.
Well, not only have we had 3 years of growth, we'd have short rates in double digits.
Yeah.
But the thing is this, if they actually follow this, what they're going to do is exactly what happened in the 1970s. You're going to get that secondary spike, and the only way you're going to shut it down is to pull a Volcker.
Well, I guess I don't know why there's not much of a difference. I mean, actually, we have just enough differences where we can argue about it, and I think make it fun for people to listen. But I'm getting. I tell you what, my trading for people has gotten a lot better. I don't think there was ever anybody better at you know, doing what I do, risk stuff using options and other things. But my outlook has gotten a boatload better since I used to think that in the 70s and those times, people did all the right things in their mind, and sometimes it just didn't work out, and they maybe didn't see it the first time through, and those kinds of things. And these were ancillary, what do you want to call it? Events that happened that they couldn't predict, and it just happened, and then they did the best they could to fix them. My brother still feels that way. I am so far past that. I mean, if you can give me, a 21-year-old guy at the University of Chicago, a test and say, okay, if you start pouring money in the system, who benefits and who doesn't? And I could do that at age 21. Here I am, how many years later, and the same bleeps are still doing it, and the same people are still making out like a bandit on it, and the same people are getting screwed by it. I refuse to believe that it's all good faith crap, and they're just making the same honest mistakes.
It's definitely not good faith.
So at least this time, now what I'm doing in my option stuff, in the protected index program, which I think was one of the best things anybody ever invented, and we from 1997 to 2007, 1 year we were money manager of the year. You absolutely cannot use that program now. The reason why? Well, you can. You've just got to sell calls so far out of the money. Because we're draining money into the system. This is not a normal market. This is not a normal priced market. These are not normal priced hotel rooms. These are not
right.
Normal priced, you know, golf greens fees at the Doral, which Trump owns. These are money numbers into the thing night after night. And you see right. It in all the little spots in the world. See the north side where people, daddy gave them dough or something. And I'm not saying people didn't work for it. They got the million-dollar houses and all the restaurants. You can't even use cash. You go to the south side where people are still, I'll use the term, working. You have 3% discount for cash. The difference in the people who have it and don't, I mean, $25 a drink? I mean, come on. I mean, what are we doing here?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and yet other people... Yet the places are crowded to a point. And when you run out of those people, I think you got somebody's going, how much? You know, type of thing. I mean, it's and yet we see it every single day. And I'm sitting there going, how do we not, after all these years, how do you get slapped by the, how do you step in the same puddle every day? If you think you'd figure it out once in a while.
Yep. I'm not arguing with you on that. Not at all.
So lately, we've just stayed along. Stayed nervously long the medals. For God's sake, Carl, they go up every day.
Yeah.
I got to believe if somebody, I talked to a guy the other night, he's got like four cryptos. He bought it, God knows what. I said, is there a top? And they go, not with these idiots in office. They're in the crypto business. It's going to keep going.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm
you're talking like you have some logic, like me too. Well, I'm saying... I would always make sure if there was such a thing, if I had crypto, I'd have some puts on it just in case, because you and I might actually think this. Somebody might think like us, this stuff's too high someday. But in the meantime, I'm not going to sell calls against it. Why would I?
Right.
The more these guys pour in the system, and the more Trump and his buddies get involved in this stuff, and the more every crook overseas wants it to stay up here. How's it going to go down? Even though it's worth nothing.
Well, I think I have all sorts of it's like. There's a bunch of people that, of course, are trying to run the same thing with housing and stuff like this. And what I try to impress on people is that this stuff all works until it doesn't. Okay.
Yeah, but it's been 20 years, bud.
And we've had a couple of times that it hasn't worked.
All you have to do is turn on the TV, listen to those guys tell you only the chumps get out, not look at your statements for 3 months, and you're back okay.
That has worked in many areas. However, not looking at it for 3 months, that's now you're talking about recency bias. Bias. How long did it take in 08, and how long did it take in 2000? It wasn't 3 months.
08 was 6 months. 2000 was. I'm saying But, I mean, there's an awful lot of people that
wait, in the market or in some of those other sectors, for example?
I'm talking about if you started putting money in your 401k when you were 35 and now you're 55, 58. There's been a few times where as long as you kept your hands in the boat and don't open up your statements, you're fine. And then that is the education up and down. You and I can remember before that, where actually it's been decades where we were even or down. I can remember three of them in my experience.
Yeah.
One I wasn't trading, but if you say that to somebody, they look at you like you got four heads.
Yeah, I am well aware of that, and guess what? The idea that this won't revert to the mean, okay.
Okay, but as you know, I agree with you, but I also want to get knowledge out of your head. If you want TV, I'll put you next to somebody nice. I'll put you next to Aaron Burnett and goes, Carlos, all makes a lot of sense, but for God's sake, buddy, it's 20-some years. What do you were here 22 years ago and you said the same thing. Now look at the market.
Well, and by the way, how many people bought houses in 2006 and 2007 because nothing bad was going to happen and they got destroyed?
You know what? If they stayed in them, what's the problem?
If
they had to sell, they were screwed.
Well, that's right. But here's the thing. All right, so when that happened, I tried to put some stink bids in on some of those places down where I lived, okay, because there was an opportunity to be a landlord and make some dough, right? All of a sudden, the cap rates, hey, that works, where before they did not. All right. The banks that held that paper would not hit they wouldn't even talk to me.
Yeah.
I mean, it was amazing. 4 years later, no BS, finally, one of these places that I was quite interested in, because it was literally down the street from me, went. Oh, by the way, the loss that was taken on that was utterly enormous because the power was off. It was in Florida. And guess what? You know what happens when you leave the power off in Florida and it's 95% humidity in there for 4 years? You now have a gut job because there's so much mold behind the walls.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah. All right. So finally, I see a big dumpster out there and half the house is in the dumpster, right? And
We got a dash, Bubba. If somebody would have told me, after going through the 70s and 80s stuff, where I actually did all that work, I say it all the time, I was the inflation guy, and I traded for a long period of time where sometimes market went up, sometimes they went down, and it had a little bit of a positive push to it,
right.
But by and large, you wanted to be a neutral trader.
Right.
All right, and when I first got in the money management business, I had a little bit of a positive bias, but I kind of wanted to be a neutral trader too, because that's the way the market acted. But if you would have told me, and this is the extent of it. December of 2000, M2 was 49.27.
Right.
All right, so here we are, 2025, so we're 25 years later. I'm going to say the population probably hasn't doubled, has it? I don't think. You know what the money supply is now?
Off the top of my head, no.
22.2.
Yeah, okay.
So we're up 4.5 times.
Right.
And anybody who doesn't think that all that money is in the market, any job teaching, I'll bet, Kevin's a dean now, and they love him over there. He's probably doing okay. I doubt very seriously he's doing 4 times more than they did in 2000. I don't think any auto worker is. I don't think is anybody other than, maybe a lawyer, maybe, because they've managed to keep, or if you happen to own stuff. Is anybody up 4.5 times in 25 years? Or?
Absolutely not. No.
So we wonder why there's friction in this country. That's
See, here's the thing. All of this is being driven by this new hype, this new bubble. It's AI is.
It's not new. It's been going on for 25 years.
I get that. Yeah. But the focus changes. Where the locus is, okay, does change over time. So I mean, the current thing is the AI craziness, right? And this too shall pass.
That's the excuse.
I get this. Yes.
What do you got going this weekend? We did a dash. Are you you marathoning? You running? Or are you hanging around drinking beers?
No, I'm. I don't have a whole lot going on from that standpoint, which is which is kind of good. So that's a good thing.
Tennessee playing home.
Well, Tennessee, I believe so, but I'm not entirely sure.
How far is that from you?
Oh, God, not very. But, you know, anybody that thinks that I'm going to be running around doing this stuff, well...
Well, you could be a long way away from somebody in Tennessee, from one end to the other, right, east to west.
Knoxville is right up the road from me.
Okay.
So I don't go anywhere near downtown on game days because that's stupid.
Oh, God. All right, well, they play anybody good?
The last game was actually a lot of fun because it was a real game. Okay, now we've had some problems with this. Yeah, this is, I mean, we're supposed to be, what are we? Do we have a bye this week? Maybe we have a bye.
Maybe you do.
I think we have a bye this week. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think we do. But yeah, so you know, we'll see about that.
There's a few buys.
Yeah, because it's not. Yeah, because we don't have anything till the 11th. So yeah, we have a bye this week.
Well, there you go.
So all right,
well, have a nice weekend. We'll talk. It's 90 up here. You guys got to be warm.
Well, actually, no. You know, right now on my porch is 55.4 degrees.
Wow, we're gonna be 89 the next 3 days.
Beautiful, and we are this. But you know what? My prediction that we were not going to get hit by any hurricanes is so far holding.
Well, the middle, if you're in Bermuda, you wouldn't think that.
Bermuda's not the United States. That's I didn't true. Say nobody's going to get hit by hurricanes.
They're all making the right turn.
I said the con U.S. is not going to get hit by hurricanes.
Yeah, you're right, bud. All right, we'll talk on you on Tuesday. Be good.
All right, you bet. Take care.
That's all, folks.